Hi, I'm Dr. Henry Black. I'm an adjunct professor of medicine at the Langone New York University School of Medicine, and I'm here today with my friend, Dr. Graham McGregor from London. Graham?
Hi, Henry. Great to do this. I'm Graham McGregor. I'm professor of cardiovascular medicine at Barts and London Hospital Medical School in London, and also chairman of the Action Group on SALT, both in the UK and worldwide.
What I want to talk about today is something I know you've been interested in, possibly for your whole career, that is the so-called SALT controversy. The first question I have is, why is there a controversy?
Well, I think that's a good question. I'm not sure. I guess it's mainly due to pressure from the salt and food industry, but the evidence for salt is overwhelming. You look at the wealth of it, epidemiological migration, all the animal evidence studies in chimpanzees, treatment, genetic outcome studies we have now. And the evidence is overwhelming that salt puts up our blood pressure and is responsible for a very large number of strokes, heart attacks and heart failure. And in countries where it's high, such as China and Japan, even higher than in the US or here, cancer of the stomach, very clearly related to a high salt intake.
But that should be so obvious, at least it is to me and many others over here. Why don't people accept the physiological evidence, which is clear?
The epidemiological evidence,
which is even clearer. What's the problem?
Well, I think it's a bit like tobacco. You know, it was clear in the 1960s, very clear tobacco caused cancer of the lung and then subsequently a major factor in heart attacks. But it's taken 40 years for that evidence to really be to come through. And the tobacco industry has fought a very careful, well-conducted campaign or war, I would say, against that evidence.
War is probably the right word.
Yeah, the salt industry, particularly in the US, the Salt Institute has done the same. The food industry used to be against it, but certainly in the UK, the food industry now, on the whole, is in favour of salt reduction because of the success we've had, and they've seen they can reduce salt in food without loss of sales, which, of course, that's what they're concerned about, is they feel if we reduce salt, we might lose sales, and therefore they're resistant to that idea. But I think in the UK, we've shown that it's perfectly possible to slowly reduce salt intake, that's the key, and not lose sales because people get used to it.
I remember in the early 1970s, work done, I think at NIH by Dr. Henkin, showed that within a couple of weeks, if you gradually reduce the sodium in food, and sometimes we confuse salt and sodium, and I think that probably confuses the public a little, but if you reduce the sodium content of food in a gradual way, within 30 days, food that you thought was fine becomes too salty. Why haven't we done that? Or maybe you have done that in the UK. Tell me a little bit about what your campaign's been in the UK.
Well, in the UK, we were very fortunate in having a very strong NGO that got a lot of publicity about salt, and we then got the Food Standards Agency to take on salt reduction, a quasi sort of governmental organization, but free of political control. And the way we did it was to set targets, progressive targets for each food group for the food industry. So for bread, for ready prepared meals, for cheeses, for meat products, targets were set that had to be achieved in 5 years' time. And when after 3 years, we had another setting of targets to achieve 2 years ahead of that. So basically, you're trying to ratchet down, slowly ratchet down the amount of salt they've added. And this has been very successful. It's been a voluntary policy, been difficult because of that, because we have to get all of the food companies to agree to it. But particularly the supermarkets have been very helpful and very keen to do it because they want the good publicity about they're doing this on behalf of their customers. Now, they don't label any of the things as lower in salt, but you're absolutely right. What has happened is people have got used to the lower salt. I mean, bread has come down by about 30% overall in the last 7 years. And when people go abroad now, they say how salty the bread tastes.
Right.
But they much prefer the bread in the UK.
That's what I would have expected. It's
very easy to do this, provided you've got the industry supporting you and you've got the right sort of NGO and the right government organization, Department of Health, whatever.
Was all this done without the public being aware it was done to, being done to them, so to speak?
More or less. I mean, there was a public health campaign to try and inform them that salt was bad for them. And we've certainly had a lot of publicity because we do a lot of media activity looking at different levels of salt in different foods and showing which is the worst hamburger, which is the worst sausage, which is the worst bread. And this gets a lot of media attention in the newspapers, online and newspapers, and puts pressure on the companies. So the public are aware that salt is dangerous. I think 95% of the people in the UK now agree that salt is dangerous, not quite sure why it's dangerous. And also they don't really know, the majority of people don't really know it's been reduced in all the foods they buy. They haven't noticed it.
But one of the things that always occurred to me, which is what we do with milk, is that certain colors mean it's a low-fat milk. Yeah. Other colors mean it's full. Why don't we do that with soup, for example, or other things that are heavily
salted? Well, we do have a signpost labeling system coming in of green, amber, and red for salt, sugar, calories, fat, and so on. So that is slowly coming in, but it hasn't got into all food products. But the point is, we, in a way, the success of this program doesn't rely on the public choosing foods with less salt. It's just that everything is reduced. And of course, the brilliant thing is that the poorest people, who really have no choice, they go and buy the cheapest foods in the supermarket, you know, cheapest sausages, bread and everything. The biggest reductions in salt have been made in those.
I'm not surprised. That's where the most benefit can come.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. They're the ones who die prematurely in the UK, 15 years prematurely from people like ourselves. And they're the ones we really need to help. And this program is designed in some way to help them more than others. So it doesn't require people to choose foods with less salt in, much as we would like people to do that. We're not asking them to do that.
Do you have data so far on what's happened to stroke rates, for example, or heart attack rates?
Well, let me just say that salt intake has fallen. They're very careful measurements of 24-hour urine in adult random samples of adults, and it's fallen from 9.5 grams a day to 8.1. So it's a 15% reduction. Probably that was in 2011, so it's probably fallen further.
And this now, is salt, not sodium, right?
That's salt. I know in the States you talk about sodium, but you have to divide it by 2.5 to get back to sodium. I mean, they're interchangeable. But that has resulted on predictions of roughly 9,000 deaths a year saved from strokes and heart attacks in the UK alone, that reduction in salt. Now, what we're working on is the health survey for England, looking at the blood pressure fall, which has occurred, and how far we can attribute that to the salt reduction. And I can't tell you that yet because we don't have the full results, but it looks good. And there's also been a big reduction in stroke incidents and stroke deaths. But of course, a lot of other things may have accumulated in that, better treatment of blood pressure, etc. So we're looking at that as well. So we don't have evidence of that. But of course, Finland, where there was a big reduction in salt, did show big reductions in blood pressure and stroke levels during the course of their 30-year reduction.
I think we've done a very poor job marketing hypertension. And if we only could convince people that blood pressure and strokes are connected, as we know, I've yet to meet an individual when faced with a choice of, do you want to wake up tomorrow morning having had a stroke or a heart attack, would choose to have a stroke. That's the thing.
Well, I agree with that, because I've seen a lot of people with strokes, and it's a sort of nightmare. The worst nightmare that most doctors have is waking up in the morning half paralyzed with a stroke and leading the next 5 years of life paralyzed. And that, as you know, Henry, those strokes can be prevented by A, doing things that reduce your blood pressure, like salt reduction in a population thing, but also better control of blood pressure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, let me ask you, what do you think we could do or should do in the United States?
Well, I think you ought to copy, perhaps it's not the right word, but to look at the UK and formulate your own program based on some of the lessons we've learned in the UK. And to some extent, New York did do that. Mayor Bloomberg and Sonia Angel and others in New York did set up a salt reduction program, but I don't think it's been very successful because it hasn't really got the remit, the power, you know, it hasn't really got the food industry behind it, and there's been a lot of opposition. as you know, in the US from the Salt Institute and various consultants who work for them or work surreptitiously for them to try and oppose this. And they've been quite successful, rather like the tobacco industry, in stopping action. And I think what needs to happen, and I've said this again and again, is you need to get a powerful organization of doctors or who believe in the fact that salt is important to oppose this, because there's no one really opposing it. There's the sort of medical hierarchy is not really answering back as it has done with tobacco. And I think it's rather sad because nothing's happening about salt in the United States. And yet, interestingly, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is carrying out salt reduction programs or helping to carry out salt in China. Mm-hmm. So what on earth is the US carrying out salt, helping other countries to carry out salt reduction programs and not doing it itself?
I think we could look at it one of two ways. One is that we have to be patient.
Yeah.
It took 25 years, really, the identifying tobacco as being, cigarettes especially, being a problem before we actually saw that rate go down. But I don't think we should be patient about this with the media and the ability to get to people and the fear of having a stroke and how we could prevent a fair amount, number of them, that we could have a lot of traction. But we can't lose heart. We have to keep going.
I agree entirely, and I'm certainly very impatient, and we want a worldwide, most countries now are formulating plans to reduce salt, and it's sad to see the United States some way behind that, but that isn't to mean you can't do it and get on with it, and the evidence is overwhelming. We just need to get organized and get the media to get involved, because as we've shown in the UK, the industry doesn't lose out. Once it's realized it's not going to lose sales, mm-hmm. then it's prepared to do it. And it's very keen to do it because it's good for them. And in the end, we tell the food industry bosses that, you know, if you reduce the salt, people will live longer. You'll have more consumers. You'll be able to make more profit. You know,
they'll be eating that low salt soup much longer.
Yeah, that's right. And it will be much more enjoyable, too, because that's the other thing. People say, oh, food without salt is so awful. But I can tell you, and I'm sure you know from your own experience, if you don't eat a lot of salt, food with less salt in is so much more enjoyable to eat than this very heavily laden salt from the processed food industry and all these fast foods, which to me are inedible and disgusting.
I agree. There are many other ways to make food tasty.
Yeah,
I want
absolutely.
To thank you very much for taking your time, and hope you keep on this. It's been a very exciting experience for me to watch, and how successful you've been, and how successful I hope we can be here as well. Thank you.
Well, I hope so too, Henry. It was great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.